Here we go. Okay. So today's topic is called, don't all smile at me like that. I can't do it. Okay, I'm going to pretend you're all new people. Okay, today's topic is Taharat Mishpacha, Keeping Up with the Times. I actually almost stopped there with the title, but I thought it needed a little more because it wasn't enough definition. And then we got to As Our Bodies Change. So once that topic was out there, I had a lot of people giving me comments about their changing bodies and what they thought about it. And apparently it's on everyone's mind, and I know everyone has a lot to say about it, but that's actually not what the session is about. The session is not going to be about the fact that I have to lift up my glasses to read my notes like this because I can't see out of them anymore. It's not going to be about the fact that when we stay up late, I don't know about you, but I can't move so much in the morning anymore. And it's not going to be about the days that our backs or feet or knees or whatever body parts decides to take the day off. Like, it's not going to be about those bodily changes that we're all going through. That would be a fabulous session, but not for today. Today we're going to discuss about Taharat Mishpacha and how it relates to us as we grow up. I like to call it Kala Class Part 2. I'll explain what that means in a moment. And before we get to Kala Class Part 2, let's revisit what Kala Class Part 1 is. Okay, looking at the group here, this makes it easier for me. Has anyone attended a Kala class recently? Okay, that was the response I was hoping to get. Not really, but I tend to attend them fairly often because I teach them. So let's review. What is taught at a Kala class? It goes something like this, okay? I make it into 12 sessions, but its basics are like this. What makes you Anita? Your period. Then you mention the staining word, and everyone freaks out. How do you get out of Nida? Count 5 days or wait for your period to end. Count another 7 days called Sheva Nikiyim. Do a bunch of bedikot. Bring them into a rabbi if needed. They freak out again. While in Nida, don't pass the car keys and a bunch of other harchakot. They freak out again. And then use the mikveh at night. Clean up well beforehand. Say a bracha. Dunk, and you're good to go. Okay? Summary of a Kala class. Now, everyone here knows that that is a bit of a short, brief summary of what actually Taharat Mishpacha is about. And now that it's recorded, I might actually get in trouble for presenting it that way, but I'll risk it, okay? Although the truth is, I really think that most Kalas who come through my classes leave understanding just that and possibly even less. And it's not really their fault. And I'm choosing to believe it's not my fault either. They're busy planning a wedding. They have flowers and dresses and pictures and family and friends and, of course, that very good-looking boy on their minds. It's a really tough time to learn an entire new mitzvah. It's a mitzvah with many details, a very complex mitzvah, a mitzvah that affects them almost every day, a mitzvah that pertains to the most private of places and relationships, a mitzvah that has to do with the bathroom and bathing and privacy. It's a tough setup. And, of course, I always mention there's no example. There's no previous reference. We're not modeling it after anyone. We've never watched anyone do it. So the first time and often the only formal teaching of an entire topic in halacha and Judaism happens in 12 hours during our most stressed out time of our life. Okay, I've been doing Shabbos my whole life. I still stress out about lots of parts of it. Don't ever ask me to make a salad, certainly not when Rabbi Brand's coming for lunch. Okay? On tape there. Oops. Saying bracha. Been doing it for years, right? I pick out a new cereal. I got no idea what bracha I'm supposed to say in it. I got to go check my list. There are things that we practice over and over and over and over again for years, and we still need to tweak them. Certainly this with no reference, no model, nothing to follow, it's really, really hard. And then they get married. And guess what? The day after, that woman is completely responsible for the entire mitzvah. She's supposed to be an expert just by standing under the chuppah. All they have are the notes they took, whatever they remember from their high school class, which they were probably way too embarrassed to even listen to, whatever some books that they might have, which are great references, and I have some I'm going to show, and whatever possibly their husband learned while he was in the chatan class, if he actually took one. So for a few kalas, that's enough. For a few women, that's enough. But for most, it's not. So this is the first part of the class where I give my plug that I always say, ask. Every shiur I give, every class I give, anything I talk to, heck, sometimes I'm not even giving a class, I will tell women. Ask a question if you have a question regarding Taharat Mishpacha. If you're unsure, you don't know, confused, or just nervous, call and ask. You can call a Rav directly, who will be so happy to listen and answer your question, or, and you should feel free to count with me, this is my first plug for the YU hotline, or you can call the hotline, and someone there will be happy to speak to you and get you your answer. It can stay anonymous, or you can identify yourself. Either way is completely fine. But operators are standing by, so feel free to call. Even if you think it's the most obvious question, or you know you learned it in your Kala class, call. If you have a question, there's an answer out there for you, and you and your husband deserve it. Okay, so that's the regular challah class. That's nice for all the regular questions of how do I count seven? When should I do my bedikah? Did I miss shkia? How short should my nails be? When is the mikvah open? What if I can't go on a Friday night? Those questions we know to ask because we remember hearing about them. That's the stuff we know because we heard a tiny bit about it in our challah class and maybe we remember. What about the stuff we never heard of in our challah class? What about the stuff that wasn't mentioned? Or if it was mentioned, we didn't listen because it seemed so far away. Postpartum, IUDs, menopause, pregnancy. Those were definitely scary words to me as a challah that I remember. I remember thinking, whatever. I don't need those now. It's so far away. Well, it's not so far away. We're here today because we're here. Life goes on. Our life changes. Our bodies change. And then, of course, parts of this mitzvah are going to change as well. So today we're going to go through some of the changes and how they affect the mitzvah. So like I said earlier, consider this challah class part two, the stuff you thought you wouldn't need. Okay, now that we're pretending to all be challahs, which is kind of fun, I'm going to make the same assumption that we will walk out of here as confused and overwhelmed as the challahs walk out of my challah class. I remember when my husband was training, he's a doctor, and one of the things he had to do, he's not an OB, but he had to do an OB rotation. And when he was in the OB rotation, they told him that they need him to know as much as a New York cab driver knows about delivering a baby. Like, you just need to know the basics, you just need to know a little bit to get through. So you have to know something, not all of it. So that's actually my goal for today. I don't know if you're allowed to be a teacher and say that. My goal is for us not to know it all. Our goal is for us to know a little bit. Enough that we know we still need to learn more, possibly most of what we need to know, but at least enough that we know what to ask and what is out there and available to us. Okay. Before we get to those fun topics, I need to explain a topic that is relevant to almost any woman at any point in time in her life. It's called staining. Okay. The reason we're going to discuss staining before anything else, because the definition of it and how to handle it is actually going to be recurring through every single scenario we're going to talk about. Okay, so what is staining? Staining is, listen closely, and it's in large letters in my notes, okay? Staining is any vaginal discharge that is seen when a woman is not expecting her period. I'm going to say it again. Any vaginal discharge that a woman sees when she is not expecting her period, okay? When a woman sees a stain that is not her expected period, it actually does not make her a NIDA unless three criteria are met, sometimes four. Unless all of these criteria are met at the same time. It has to be bigger than a gris. A gris is about the size of a U.S. penny, some say a dime. Okay, so if the stain is smaller than a gris, a woman can 100% ignore the stain that she has seen. If it's on white, then it could be a problem. If it is seen on color, she can ignore the stain. And, of course, the color of the stain itself. If it's a bright red, sometimes a dark brown, sometimes a black. Some of us have heard all this before. If it's any of the questionable colors, it could be a problem. If it's none of those colors, she does not have to pay attention to that stain. Okay, so therefore, if the stain is on a colored garment or colored tissue, the stain does not make her a NIDA. If it's smaller than a gris, smaller than that size, it will not make her a NIDA, and you don't have to call. If a woman sees a little red spot on a pair of white underwear, but she knows it's smaller than the size of a penny, she does not have to call or ask anyone or even for herself think that she's not watching something. She's absolutely adhering to halacha by saying, I know that's smaller than a gris, this stain does not make me a nida. Okay? And of course, if it's not a problematic color, whether it's a very light tint or it's not red, again, if it's on color, she can't identify the real color of the stain, so that's part of it. So if a stain does not meet all three of those criteria at the same time, problematic color, red, seen on something white, and larger than a gris, the woman, that stain will not make her a NIDA. Now, I don't know if you guys know this. I see little bubbles popping out of everyone's head that says, isn't that a loophole? I know it's blood. I know it's uterine bleeding. I know where it's coming from. Why doesn't that make me a NIDA? I learned in my challah class part one, any red stain is going to make me a NIDA. Okay, let's review why it's not a loophole. And I want to tell you, I probably give this talk all the time on the hotline, and when I'm helping people with whatever's going on, they're like, this is the state, the stain. This is the conversation I go over and over and over again, okay? Not only is it not a loophole, I'm going to tell you that it's actually wearing those things that you keep hearing, wearing dark, don't look, use colored toilet paper, use colored liners. That stuff is actually the preferred way of keeping this mitzvah. It is not a loophole, okay? Let's understand why. Okay, the pasuk, there are two psukim in the Torah that talk, this is the only source we're going to use today. Hold it against me or not. This is the only, there are two psukim in the Torah, okay? They're both in Vayikra. Their first one is Vayikra Tetva Pasuk Yotet. I guess I have to read, right? Okay. V'yisha ki tihyazava dam yezova bipsara shivat yamim tihye b'nidata v'chol hanogea bayitma ad ha'arav. Okay, so loosely translated is that when a woman has a flow of blood, she becomes a zava, which for our purposes is the same as a nida. There's some major halachic discussion, the difference between a zava and a nida. We are not discussing that at all, mostly because I haven't learned it. But for our practical purposes, nida is it's the same thing. And she for seven days, she will be a nida, etc., etc., etc. The second pasuk is in Vayikra, Perek Yud Chet, Pasuk Yud Tet, also Pasuk Yud Tet. Interesting, I think. V'elisha b'nida tumata, lo tikrab l'galot derata. And when a woman is in her nida tumata, her monthly nida, lo tikrab l'galot derata, a man cannot come close to reveal her nakedness. Okay, so these two psukim have two very important words that are going to affect how we define what a flow is. Okay, that basically, what makes a woman a nida is her monthly flow, which means it's about the timing of it. It has to be something that she is expecting monthly, and it has to be a flow, like a significant amount of blood. And so that's what would make a woman a nida d'oraita. Timing, it's her monthly expected monthly period. And two, it's a flow. It's a certain amount. And d'oraita adds that it has to be accompanied by something called a hargasha, which is like an internal sensation that pretty much is agreed upon no woman feels today. It's like the sensation of the egg being released. If you think you have it, talk to someone about it. Most people, to assume, do not have it today. So in today's world, let's say no one is a nida d'oraita because no one's having a hargasha with that. So we're already removed from the d'oraita. However, we're Jews. So when there's something we want to avoid, we add lots and lots and lots of other things to it. All of kashrut, separate meat and milk, is because it's a geder. It's more of a fence around, you know, keeping, not cooking a goat in its mother's milk. Shabbos, all of muksa is because we don't want to come to do malacha. So all of our mitzvot that we really do routinely are all more layers and layers of a fence the Chazal put in place to protect us from anything d'oraita. So reviewing d'oraita, it is her monthly flow, so it has to be the time that she's expecting it. It has to be the flow, it has to be a significant amount, and it has to come with a hargasha. So those are the three criteria for d'oraita. Now Chazal come along and say, okay, we're going to remove one of them, and that woman will still be a nida. If it's her monthly flow, if it's her monthly, and it's her flow. According to Chazal, that would still make a woman a nida. That is why we are all nida when we get our periods. And then a third category, Chazal said, you know what? Let's make stains that come from that area also nida. But because it's just stains, it's not her monthly, and it's not her flow, we're going to only accept, the only stains that are going to be problematic are the ones that, dot, 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 meet this criteria, are red, are bigger than a gris, and fall on white. So that's why it is not a loophole. Because when Chazal set up that a woman's discharge or stain could render her a nida, they set it up that it must meet those criteria. No kala will ever understand that. And I think for most women that I speak to who have been married and practicing this, myself included, it is a very, very hard concept. I will tell you, I will call the rabbis two or three times in 1 week. I'm like, staining question again? I'm allowed to say it's not. Like, it's such a hard concept because we know it's discharge. We know it's from the uterus. We see it's blood. But I can quote Rav Schwartz on this because when we once had a meeting with him, he said, I'm not arguing with the mitzias that is dumb. Imagine sitting around a table with Rav Schwartz listening to this conversation. It's like, I'm not arguing that the mitzias is the reality is that it's dam. It's just not dam nida. And the specific classification of dam nida is very specific. I would say any questions, but I'm going to say hold until the end. Okay? Because there could be questions. Okay? Okay, so therefore, Therefore, when you hear over and over and over again, wear dark, or don't look after you've gone to the bathroom when you're wiping, because another criteria is that if we don't see it, we're not responsible for it. Again, I mean, we can't say that to our children about things. Like, I see your backpack. You can't just say, I didn't see your backpack. I'm not responsible for it. It doesn't work in parenting and children. But in halacha, we are allowed to respond that way. If we don't see it, we're not responsible for it. So that's why they say, don't look. Wear dark. Now, any woman who's doing this panics when she sees dark, or will accidentally look while she's wiping and then see it and then panic and then throw it away and then flush it and go, that didn't happen. So everyone's done that. We all know that. There's help for that. But it's part of, you know, I can say to you, something small on toilet paper, there's a concept of makabel tuma. Many poskim, not all, many poskim, and I think mostly in Chicago we are allowed to poskim like this, and Rav Schwartz has poskim this for the hotline, a small amount on toilet paper, because toilet paper is not makabel tuma, would not make a woman a nida. Now, if you're uncomfortable making that decision on your own, you can call the hotline. Was that plug number two? You can call the hotline, and someone will be happy to assist you with that. You can call your rub directly. But if that's uncomfortable, you should know it's only uncomfortable for us. I just have to point out, one thing I've learned in doing this is that I still get the looks when you say call a rub, and I appreciate that I look like I'm from Mars when I say that. But to them, it is not strange. It just isn't. It's just routine. It's what they learn for. They're talking about it with hundreds of people, so they don't really know that it's you or even notice. It is just what they do with the knowledge that they've learned, and they're happy to it doesn't do them any good to have the knowledge unless they're sharing it with someone who needs it. So, but if I look like I'm a Martian, I will say you can call the hotline, you can call me personally, you can call any woman or anybody, a mentor who's available, and get the answers for you, okay? Okay, so just quickly review. A stain that does not meet those criteria, not going to render a woman a nida. We're going to have to hold on to that thought as we get to the next part. Okay. However, a woman cannot have her period and wear a dark underwear and say, I don't see anything, I am not a nida, because it doesn't work that way. Or a woman may not have her period and not look after wiping and say, well, I didn't see anything, I don't know what's going on. The point is that we are honest people. When a woman has her period, she's going to notice it, she's going to be able to tell what it is, she's going to have to use the proper sanitary napkins to keep herself comfortable. Once a woman falls into that category, plus it's usually in her expected time, so therefore there's also a clue that it's her period. Once a woman falls into that category, then those criteria kind of fall by the wayside, because it's not staining anymore. It has moved back into the category of flow and time. Does that separation make sense? That's what we go for. Okay. Now, just to finish up this topic, we know as women that not all of our stains come out labeled with a little flag that say, I'm a stain or I'm a flow. Like, they don't help us identify what they are. It's not always easy to tell what they are. Certainly, as our bodies change or we take medications or we go through changes, we don't have a schedule. We don't know what it's going to be like. It's not always clear what's happening. That's when it's appropriate to ask. Plug number three. You can call the hotline, you can call your rub, that's what they're there to do. Saying, this is also highly important, which I know most of you have heard before, saying I'll just make myself a nida is actually against halacha. Ignoring it generally doesn't make us feel so good either. Getting the proper guidance almost 100% of the time makes everyone feel better in the end, even if the process of getting that could be uncomfortable. Okay. One more point before we actually get to it. In this conversation, we're going to be talking a lot about medicine and halacha. We have a few nurses in the room. So first of all, I want anybody's permission to discuss medicine. I'm going to say right now, I am not a doctor. That's very clear for so many reasons. But everything that has to do with our bodies, by definition, has a medical aspect to it. For that, we go to the doctors. Okay. Today, we're going to be discussing some medical issues here. But let's be clear, like I said, I am not the doctor. I'm going to be sharing some basic information and bringing the general ideas of them to the halachic realm. For actual medical advice, I say the obvious. A doctor should be consulted for that. In the same vein, for halachic questions regarding medical issues, a rav should be consulted. Halacha and medicine are actually meant to work together, and they really do. Doctors help us take care of ourselves physically. A rav can help us take care of ourselves spiritually. And just in medicine, there are many generalizations, but we go by what our doctor recommends for us personally, because medicine we know is best practice, in a case by case individually. I mean, we would never go over to North Shore and sit in a room with a bunch of kids with, you know, running nose and fever and let the doctor say, okay, everyone here, do this and come back tomorrow. I mean, that wouldn't work. You have to go in and have your personal appointment and get all the facts for your case, for that child, for what's going on at that time. So too, halacha is the same. There are definitely generalizations out there, and we're going to talk about some of them today. But as things come up medically, or in the case of any personal question, halacha is also best practiced case by case. So as we give a general overview of some of the changes we go through, please keep in mind that as you go through this, there will be more specific answers for everyone's personal case if you ask. I'm going to put in plug number 4 or 5 for the hotline. What are we up to? Something like that, okay? You can call the hotline for your specific case or any rough. Yes?
I had a fella come to me that needed help. I don't know, she was out of town. So I actually didn't, I'm not a college teacher or a rough, so I could give her my basics. But then I called hotline.
Right.
She needed an answer right then and there. Okay.
Yes.
And then I called you.
Oh, great.
Just from the Achim.
Fabulous.
And I called Lynn.
Did you leave a message? Did I talk to you?
I'm so unfamiliar. Well, you were not on the hotline, see? So then I went and I finally got a hold of the Chama Brand's cell phone, and she guided us through it.
Perfect.
You say call the hotline, is that what you meant? Because I was like,
yes.
Really going
So I will say, I guess we'll take a pause for this now, that the hotline is literally a phone that we carry with us when we're on call. So when we're in the car, driving carpool, we're not answering the phone.
She was driving carpool. No.
Yeah, we don't answer the phone when we're driving. We don't answer the phone when our kids are around. We don't answer it. It's not a full-fledged 24-hour thing. You can leave a voicemail, and the hotline says we'll call you back within 12 hours. So for extremely timely issues, it is best to call a rev. If you know us, my cell phone is available. It's published in lots of places. You are welcome to call me. I can give it out here. I'm happy to. 847-609-9103. You're welcome to call me. Any rev can answer, but there are definitely ways you can call my house. But I always say my answering machine, world fashion. My whole family hears it. I suggest you don't leave specific messages on it. But my voicemail is just for me. Again, some people prefer the anonymity, but we are completely all available to help with anything. We're going to hand those out in the end. But that is important to know, and thank you for bringing that up. Both the email and the phone have like a 12-hour leeway to get answers as it fits into our lives for now. Okay. Only a few minutes left when I need to click. Okay. So we discussed introduction to how there's always more to learn, idea of asking questions, the concept of staining as it's going to recur through everything, and we talked about medicine and halacha actually working together. Okay, so really what we're getting to today, we're really going to discuss, I have a piece on pregnancy, delivery, labor, postpartum, and that's a much longer conversation. It is available. I'd be happy to review that with anyone. We're not going to get to it today because of time. Today we're going to discuss birth control, IUDs, and menopause are the topics we're going to go through. Okay. Again, brief overview, but making sure everyone knows there's information out there and available and some things that maybe we hadn't thought of to take into consideration. First of all, there are many types of birth control out there. Discussing the scope of them is beyond this class and me for right now. There is much debate about which of the many methods are halachically acceptable. So asking a personal shaila, although hard, is appropriate. In general, the most accepted ones are the non-permanent ones, and the ones that do not interfere with the normal course of intercourse. So the two most common that fit into that category are the pill and an IUD. Of course, as life goes on and medical situations come up that require other options, again, there's a halachic answer out there, and there have been many cases where other types of birth control have been appropriate based on halachic conversation. Okay? You can't have a conversation about birth control without, in a Jewish classroom setting, without the comment and the understanding that the mitzvah to have children is a very, very strong mitzvah in our tradition. Yesterday, Nechama Price, the keynote speaker, gave an entire shiur on Fru Uravu. Again, scope and depth beyond the session. But I can tell you, anytime I ask a shaila for a woman, if the couple is trying to conceive, it completely dominates the decision. It completely takes precedence over any other reality that is out there. The kulas that I have heard about and the piske halacha have been given, like the kulas that have been enacted, would blow us all away for the sake of having a child. So as Jews, we need to understand that having children is a huge, great priority in our tradition. At the same time, the parents' well-being is of also great concern. So the balance between these two priorities is definitely up to each couple. And ideally, any use of birth control is done first in consultation with their rep. Okay, moving on to the specific pills. Okay, so birth control pills, they come in many, many, many different types. It is one of the most commonly used types of birth control. In general, it gives a woman a 28-day cycle. There are 3 weeks of active pills and 1 week of inactive pills. What comes from taking the birth control pill and becoming on a regular cycle like this is that it will affect the 3 days that she will be calculating to anticipate her next period. Okay, what does that mean? If we think back to our Kala class, one of the hardest classes we had to sit through was calculating those 3 days of the following month when we would expect our period. That is a very technical class. There are even apps and websites that can figure it out for you nowadays, so you don't even have to pay attention to that class. But the idea is that after a woman's been to the mikvah, she understands, the couple understands that about 2 weeks later she's going to get her period again. Okay, and we know the Isser from the Torah for a husband and wife to be together when she has her period. So part of the halakha is that there's a calculation of which days the husband and wife should separate from intercourse just as in anticipation of her getting her period. It's very technical. There are 3 days that they usually separate from each other. One is called Yom HaChodesh, which is the exact Hebrew date. One is called Haflaga, the exact interval between her previous, and one is called the Benonit, the average, which is 30 days. So briefly what she does is she looks at a calendar, you know, the ones that come free around Rosh Hashanah time. I'll tell you, I've used the funeral one sometimes. It's a little bit morbid, but I'm not sure what to do with that. But you have a calendar, and you write down when you get your period so that she can keep track of it. After she's been to the mikvah or whenever she decides to calculate it, she'll take out the calendar. She'll look at the day she got her period. Again, she has to note what's called the ona. Ona refers to the daytime hours or the nighttime hours. There are two onas in every day. The daytime ona, which is sunrise to sunset, and the nighttime onas are the sunset to sunrise. Okay, so if a woman gets her period at 10 a.m. on Aleph of whatever month, she'll take out her calendar, and the following month, on the Hebrew date on Aleph, she'll separate from her husband. She and her husband will separate. 30 days after that original Aleph, she'll count out 30 days. They'll separate from one another. And then whatever the interval is between the previous two periods, she'll count that amount of days and separate. Okay, it's very technical. We're not going to go into that much. I really didn't want to get caught up in that. But the point of that is that when a woman is on the pill, what will happen often, she will start to see a pattern. And she will notice that every 28 days exactly, she's getting her period. It could be that when she stops her active pills and she starts her inactive pills, she might see the month after month she's always getting her period on the second day after she stops, or the fourth day. What one should look out for is when she's keeping track of this. If she sees a pattern, once she has seen the same pattern for 3 months in a row, she will only be required to separate. The couple will only be required to separate for that one day. It's called a vesek kavua. It's called an expected calendar. 3 times the same day and the same ona in a row, whether it be the same Hebrew date or the same haflaga, they can only keep 1 day. Again, I would like to discuss that with anyone on a personal level because it's really complicated and technical, but that's a really important thing to know, that once a woman is taking a pill and it keeps her cycle very regular, she needs to understand that there is now a new halachic reality that she has entered, and it would change the days that they would separate. Okay? What's nice about that is that instead of separating for 3 days, the husband and wife only need to separate for 1 day. Or even better, if they're not keeping track and they just kind of avoid each other for like a week beforehand because they're just nervous she's going to get her period, once they know halachically that they only have 1 day, they have more time together, and in general, that's a better thing. Okay, so the bottom line is keep record of when you get your period if you're on the pill, and if you notice a pattern, let's ask and find out what that pattern is and understand the new halachic reality, okay? For women who are doubling up packs or on the 3-month pill, there's a machloket about it, but some would even say that if a woman were to take 2 or 3 packs in a row, but every single time she stops her pill, she gets her period 3 days later, even if it's not a routine 28 days or it's not this, there's something that she's doing that she knows she can anticipate her period. Some would say, not all, that would allow her to be enough of a vesek kavua. Again, worthwhile to ask, okay? And again, the ramifications in both of these cases are that they do not have to separate for as long, okay? In terms of pills also, just for so many women who have gone through this, I want to make sure to mention, sometimes it takes a really long time for a woman to find the right pill that's going to work for her with minimal staining. That process can be very long and very frustrating. I've worked with women where that has happened. It is maddening, where they're always staining. The answer is, if you find yourself there, let someone help you. Let someone be there for you while you go through that frustrating stage. Let someone with halachic knowledge help you through it. Let someone explain staining to you. And now that you're all experts in staining, I am help me get the message out there. No one should ever just be machmir. That's also in large print. Don't ever be machmir. There's nothing proper about that. Working with your doctor and your rav or the hotline, we can help you find a medical and halachic solution. Okay? Moving on, I think we have just enough time left. IUDs. Hi, welcome to the modern world. IUDs are very, very common now. Apparently, women are very eager to get rid of their periods. That would be another fun class to have. But because of the basic, because there's a new medical standard, a new medical, routine, halacha has an answer. And there is a way that halacha responds to this. Again, I am not a doctor. I leave all that medical decision to the doctors. But as far as halacha goes, this is what we need to know about IUDs. Some IUDs will make a woman's period heavier. For some women, it makes it lighter. Some IUDs get rid of a period altogether. Some IUDs create a lot of staining. The complexities of how an IUD work and what they do for each woman will be left to the doctors, and they can decide and figure out. But what we need to know from a halachic point of view is that often questions will come up with IUDs, and those questions do require a conversation. The actual insertion of an IUD will most likely not make a woman a nida, as the amount that they have to open the uterus to insert the IUD is actually too small to make her a nida. I believe the measurement is 19 millimeters, and the instrument they use is much smaller. But the staining that will come after the insertion of an IUD will definitely require some conversation. If a woman has an IUD in, some of that staining becomes so light, it actually might not count as a period. So even if she's staining, it might not count. But some women will be staining so routinely, and we get back to that time factor where it's expected, it might be considered a halacha. I certainly cannot answer these questions. I have a great line here. I wish I could give an easy answer to this, but that would be like saying, I wish Pesach was easy. Like, it's just not what we're signed up for. So when this comes up, IUDs in particular, some women have it easy and the period disappears and it's all okay. Other women create lots and lots of complications. Again, all solvable. There was always, I quote Miriam Jaffe, who was my teacher, there's always a solution. You just have to figure it out. It would be wrong for me not to mention here the conversation of what the result is of a woman not having her period anymore. Again, a fabulous conversation if we open up to the floor of how women and couples will feel about not having that on-off cycle anymore. I'm sure it'd be fascinating and intriguing. But that's not for today. But it is important for the couple to consider the effects that that will have on the relationship. And again, I clearly say that is a case-by-case situation, as every couple has their own makeup. There's nothing across the board. Okay, one last point about IUDs, and this is actually true, and I hope the nurses in the room can support me on this. This is actually about all medical procedures. Anytime, as we grow up, I like using that phrase, as we grow up, we will be encountering more medical procedures and more things that need to be done medically. Anytime we have any medical procedure done, even not a routine exam and a pap smear, because at this point we know those are not needle-causing necessarily, but anytime we head into a different procedure, there are four questions that we should ask, and then with those questions, we'll figure out what our halachic status is. Question number one is, what is the name of the procedure? Question number two is, what instruments were used? Question number three, was there anything unusual during the procedure? And number four, which is debatable, should I expect to see blood? Those four questions, if you come to a rub with all those questions, you're going to get a very clear-cut answer, and you're going to have your answer sooner, because that's all the information that's needed. Okay, last topic, and I actually might make time, which I've never done. Okay, we're going to talk about menopause. Okay, menopause is, and I Googled it so I know it, is the point in time when it has been a year since your last period. Okay, sometimes a woman might go 6 or 8 months without a period, and then it shows up again. That's not menopause. It is menopause. It is the point at which it has been a year since your last period. The time before that is called perimenopause. Perimenopause is the 1 to 2 years before menopause when the body goes wacky. I mean, changes a lot. Okay, here's the list that was on, seriously, irregular or skipped periods, insomnia, mood swings, fatigue, depression, irritability, racing heart, headaches, joint and muscle aches, and no, I'm not done yet. Change in libido, vaginal dryness, and that is extreme vaginal dryness, bladder control problems, hot flashes, gray hair. Other than the gray hair, I might have just described a teenage daughter. But besides that, that's what we're heading into. Okay, so that can go on for a long time until menopause happens when a woman finishes her period for good. Certainly very important to talk to your doctor about these symptoms. There are many things they can do to help. There are creams and lubricants and all kinds of things that are there to ease the discomfort through this process. It is really important to remember that it will end and it will get better over time. The halachic aspect of perimenopause and menopause is all about staining, but now we're experts in it because we know what to do. So what we do is we're going to treat it like regular stains. We're going to wear dark. We're not going to look after we go to the bathroom. When I say don't look, there's also always that balance of maintaining a healthy way to care for ourselves, and sometimes that requires us to look at what's happening after we've gone to the bathroom. So a certain balance of taking care of ourselves is always important. If we're expecting or we think there's a lot of staining, it's a good time not to look. If we're monitoring our well-being and our health, it's okay to look, and it's also very important to know what to do when we look. If you have colored toilet paper, it's a great time to use it. Because if you look and you see a stain and it's on colored toilet paper, it's not a stain you have to be concerned about. Even though we said most stains on white toilet paper also will not be a problem. Okay, so that's where, like I said, we're going to wear dark underwear. We're not going to look. After a woman has her period, she only has to keep her calendar days for that first month. She doesn't have to keep it after that. If she's unsure, she can call the hotline again or call her up to find out what to do with that staining. If you're on the pill for so long, a woman will not know if she's actually going through menopause because the pill will just continue to have cause her to have a period. So around a certain age, a doctor will recommend that you go off the pill in order to see what your body is doing. And one thing I want to share about menopause that I was working with a woman who was going through it, perimenopause, and she had skipped her period for so long, and she'd gotten her period again, and she's like, usually the tone is, I'm so bummed out, but this one woman said, she goes, you know, I'm kind of happy I got it again because I don't really know when my last time using the mikvah is going to be. And she was so happy to be able to use it again and have that idea that this is my last time going. I was like, wow, that's so nice. And I found that personally very inspirational. It helped me a little bit as I continued to use the mikvah. I was like, okay, so I won't always be able to do it. And it was a beautiful way to approach, like, this is a mitzvah that passes with time. So the way she was sad that we don't know the last time we're going to use it. So that's it. Okay, so, and it's 2 o'clock, and I'm done, but to summarize, I'm just going to finish up. Let's summarize what we talked about. There is more to Taharat Mishpacha than we learned in our Kala classes or when we got married. I am down to 1 minute. Perfect. As we grow up, I love that, it's important to update our knowledge about Taharat Mishpacha. There are many sources available to get the information. It's never better to be machmir in any case in Taharat Mishpacha on our own. It's always better to get a proper answer, whether it be staining or other medical situations. There's a halachic answer out there for you, and it's yours to get. So like my kalas that finish their kala classes, I hope that we are mostly confused, walking away with the idea that, wow, there really is a lot out there. But I also hope we have the appreciation that I really hope all my kalas do, that there is so much out there to learn. The benefits of learning it are yours, your husband's, and your relationship. And one last point, someone saw that I was giving this session on bodies and changes, and I was trying to think of how to say it nicely, but I'm just going to say it. She's older than me. So she said to me, I want you to know that as the body gets older, the mind does too. And she said, that's a good thing. And I just feel that as we move forward and we continue to grow up, we can embrace the changes as best we can because now we have the maturity and the experience of life to guide us.